That's okay. So, no. Mm-hmm. So I'll call the November 1st, 2022 meeting of the Economic Development Planning, Education, Employment, Arts, and Agricultural Committee to order. Can we please stand for the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. An ice box.
Fine.
Okay. On the agenda, the next item is accepting the minutes from the October 4th meeting. I will accept the motion to accept as submitted unless anyone has any changes they'd like to make.
I'll make the motion.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. No, Peter Criswell has arrived. Okay.
Said that with love and affection.
It was. No, I said, I'm not going to say who, but the committee said to go ahead and wait, not wait for the missing members. I'm not going to say who said it. So this month is when we do our budget reviews for the departments that, you know, that they're submitting to the executive. And then, of course, that would be part of the overall budget that we'll review as a legislature. So what I like, you know, what has been historically the practice is for those departments to come in, present what they've been presented by the executive to submit to us and go over it. And if we have any questions or comments with those submissions, you know, we can ask the department heads while they're here. I hope we all had an opportunity to take a look at the budget prior to this meeting. And tonight, I think Director of Tourism, Lisa Berger, got the long straw, so she goes first. But before we start with the Director of Tourism, I want to just take a minute and recognize the department. So they won two awards this year, state-level awards. They won the 2022 Tourism Excellence Award for using data to drive success. Right, so it's the Data to Drive Success Award, and this is through all of the state, county, tourism departments. And then the second one, which I think is the most prestigious one of all, is the 2022 Tourism Excellence for Overall Marketing Award for the Seek for Yourself campaign for the county legislature, for the county tourism department. So those are really both really, you know, across the state. They're big. It's a big deal for our tourism department be recognized at that level. Yeah.
Thank you. And I am just going to breeze through a little bit of kind of what we did this past year and give you high level talking points on what we'd like to accomplish next year. And if you have specific questions about the money that has been allocated to the department, I hope to leave enough time to be able to answer that quickly. So, I don't need to beat these things to death. I Love New York does an economic study for the whole state, and just so that you know, Ulster County represents 44% of the region's tourism sales. And in 2021, the county brought in $862 million in direct tourism spending, and that's a 76% increase in visitor spending from 2020 and a 126% increase since 2019. And just so that you know, there was only one other county, and it wasn't New York City, that had a higher year-over-year increase. So, and in the Hudson Valley Catskills region, we had the highest increase in visitor spending. It's very important to our labor market. Tourism represents 14% of all employment in Ulster County. It generates over 7,000 jobs. And based on the amount of taxes it brings in, it saves the average household about $1,400 a year. And I'm happy to give you guys this study. I can send it directly to you. I have it, okay? And there are the awards that we won. There I am down in New York, and we had a great time. It was really great. And I just wanted to quickly go over a few of the other things that we did besides use data to win a couple of awards this year. In the bags that I gave you, I told you that we were going to do, last year when I was here, I told you that we were going to do a travel guide that looked totally different than anybody else's. And in fact, this is all itinerary driven, and you can see how light it is. But I spoke specifically about a couple things that I want you to know that we made good on. Leave no trace language, I talked about last year with you how important it is. So it is in here in our guide. We did a craft beverage map. We created a craft beverage map. It's also on there. We are using QR codes throughout everything we do to drive people back to our website, which will help us get better data. So I just wanted to make sure that you all knew that we did do the things that we said that we would, and you all got these in your bag. And interestingly, I gave away these travel guides at a travel show not that long ago, and the minute you say, oh, this is all itineraries, there's no listings in here, people were like, oh, I'll take it. Before that, they were like, no, I don't want your guide. It was really funny. So we launched a new website, which I talked to you guys about, which we're very, very proud of. And if you haven't had a chance to peruse it, it's so intuitive, and we really love our events feature on it. We actually got very involved in international visitation this year. We played a large role in the launch of Play Airlines, and as I was saying earlier, we partner extremely well with our neighboring county to the south, Orange County, and we are fortunate to have such a great, great partner in Amanda Dana. And we were actually the county that hosted the CEO, CFO, marketing and PR directors, and the influencers for their launch. They had a fantastic time. They loved Ulster County, and we continue to create promotions and work with them. We also were a big part of a German familiarization tour where these are for travel bookers. It's important for you guys to know these are not journalists or the next series. It's not journalists. It's not consumers. We're bringing in travel bookers from overseas, taking them to some of our places, and then working directly with them on putting together packages that they can sell to the international market. It's terrific having Play Airlines at Stewart. Just so that you all know, the number one inbound right now to Stewart from Iceland is France, which is super interesting. And Germany was third. So we had some
for good wine and beer.
Yeah, exactly. New Zealand is now doing direct service from New Zealand to JFK. And actually, our partnership with Port Authority is so robust that they know that New Zealand, people from New Zealand like to stay outside of the city, so they had the travel buyers come up here, stay up here, and see how easy it was to get into the city. We were really lucky on that one. South America, the same thing. And then, of course, Ireland and Great Britain are always big, big drivers to this area, and we've worked. And actually, that fam tour is coming up in December, which should be interesting. Let's see. As many of you know, I've worked in workforce prior to this for 7 years, and workforce is a big part of what we've been working on in tourism, and I can't say that I've done this at all alone. I do it in partnership with Sharon and her team, and Tim and his team, and we are fortunate that we get to talk once a week, and we talk mostly about workforce. We're supposed to talk about other things, but we're always talking about workforce. Anyway, I did hold a hiring mixer in April at Hutton Brickyard, which was different than anybody's ever tried to do a hiring mixer. It was meant to be casual. It was some speed dating. We had lots of businesses come, not that many participants. We're still searching for a way to do better with that. I've been privileged to be a part of the Ulster County Workforce Summit that Tim's area has been leading up, and with SUNY Ulster, with OET. I think that we're doing some really good work, important work there, and look forward to what comes out of the next steps in December. Childcare, of course, is so important. It's kind of what's holding back the ability for some of our workforce to get back to work. And again, in partnership with, it's kind of an idea that we had when I was back in OET with Chris Marks, kind of all of us talking about it and bringing it back to the fore. We were hopeful that there's a good idea for a childcare pilot project that we're hoping the legislature will find interest in. And we really know that in tourism, we need to solve this problem. Child care needs to be at times that are convenient for people who work in the tourism industry, and on days that are convenient, and also be available close to them. So that's big. On a statewide level, I co-chair a statewide workforce committee for tourism. These are the things that we did this year. We created a higher education subcommittee and panel where we're now linking our higher education partners who have a hospitality and tourism program more directly with partners in the industry. And we're hopeful that that's going to pay dividends and create more interest in hospitality and tourism careers. We really beat around this domestic J-1 program. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the J-1 program that brings foreign workers here. They are paid by their country to work in they're in hospitality programs, mostly in Europe, and they're paid to work here. This is a program of the State Department. We've been trying to figure out how we can replicate that in New York State, and we still have a long way to go, but what came out of that was an internship program, a scholarship named for Roger Dowd, who is from Brand USA, and then a series of testimonial videos from people in the industry touting their experience, why they work in this industry, and we are also in the final stages of a career pathways infographic, which right now looks like spaghetti, I have to admit. It doesn't look good. So we picked up film, and I know that you guys heard from the Hudson Valley Film Commission last month, and we work on many of the same projects that they work on, and what I would say to you is, the one thing that we really have that's super lucky for us is film resides in the tourism departments in Westchester County, Putnam County, Brockley County, Orange County, and now with us. And we have such good collaboration because of the model of Hudson Valley Tourism that seriously, and I said you would hear Amanda Dana's name again, my partner Amanda Dana in Orange County, she was tremendously helpful in Poker Face all throughout Marlboro. She, you know, called me up and said, I don't have the location, but I think you do. And that was super helpful. And we work together all the time on things like that, and I'm so lucky to work with them. So we don't need to beat to death our strategy that we used in 2022. This will all go to you guys so you can look at it. And as you can see, all of our indicators have been up for this year. Again, I'm going to send this to you so that you guys can all see it. And I have been informed that our hotel occupancy tax hit 97.7% of its projection by the end of Q3. So we've had a phenomenal year. And then I have, like, beautiful, like, creative that we do, but you don't need to see it. I want to leave time in case you have any questions about where we're going next year. What I do have planned for next year is hopefully the beginning stages of strategic planning. I've had some key conversations with people about really trying to expand certain sectors that we work in, including the LGBTQ+ sector, and we really want to work on Black and Indigenous people's history tours, and I was super fortunate to meet someone who does small groups in New York City, and we're kind of working that out together and developing step-on guides and locations and stuff like that. So that is a peek into 2023, and I'm sure you all may have some specific questions about the budget. Do you?
I do.
Okay.
So I look through here, and if I read it correctly, and I may not be reading it correctly, but
yes.
So the year-to-date transactions, that's what you actually spend in the year, over the year, right? So consistently, it's been, you know, budgeted significantly more than you've spent, right? Mm-hmm. And so last year, so far, and this goes to when? The third quarter, I guess?
Okay. Yep.
So again, it looks like you're on track to pretty much match what we did in 2019, almost probably to the dollar. It would be very, very close to that, right? So you're basically asking for the same amount of money, you know, 3 years later, right?
Well, and I did ask for some additional money in travel and conferences.
Which is what I was going
to
ask.
Let me explain to you why. So their costs have gone way up. The cost of the conferences themselves, Plus, they didn't take place since 2020, and now we're kind of fast-forwarded on that. And then I had the slide in there about the international visitation, and there is a very, very big conference that's that is literally international, takes place once a year, and in my partnership with Hudson Valley Tourism and the Port Authority, I can go to that, but we would have to pay for my airfare, not for the booth. Port Authority pays for that. I'm very lucky. So that's the increase. You know, I will say the other thing that we'd like to do with if we get increased funding, strategic planning is a must that we'd like to see happen. And then the only other thing is that there's some we are very data driven. I've mentioned to this committee before that we have mobile visitors data, we have air DNA data, right now we are not paying for this extra dashboard that can bring in information, believe it or not, from all of our, from not just our own social media things, but like Travelocity and it will tell us almost in real time what's going on with the market. So those are the things that we'd really like to invest in. Data tools.
It's like a search engine optimization.
Yeah, it is. Kind of it is. And it actually will tell us, it will tell us, here's a profile of who's been searching for you on Travelocity. Here's of Expedia. This is who your audience looks like. And it allows us to target advertising in a very efficient way.
So anyone else have a question? I got a couple more. Don't mind. Okay. So we still are printing hard copies. Yeah. How are they going? Because I know we have reduced number of throughway.
We do have reduced number of throughway stops, but it's funny because this thing is so light. The last ones that we've done are really heavy.
Right.
This thing is so light and that it is flying out the door. And we use a distribution service that distributes for us in certain extra spots in New York State, our entire distribution in New Jersey. And we added Pennsylvania, and she called me, I think it was a month ago, and said, I think I'm going to need more. And I've got like what I've got in the storage unit that we have. So...
Okay.
I've got what I have.
Okay. Well, that's good news, right? That's what I was hoping to hear.
Yeah.
So the other question I have is, so over the course of the last couple of years, you know, obviously after COVID hit, that industry was probably hit harder than any other industry in the country, right? The hospitality tourism industry.
Yeah.
And so we have lost some businesses over the last few years, right? Has that impacted dramatically or into it? I mean, I know that we had one pretty big draw and also kind of it's gone to private hands, you know, and have we seen other things like that that might impact, you know, tourism going forward?
So I think that, I know that there was a twin hit with the pandemic, right? People in the beginning in the hospitality industry didn't know how to operate under the new guidelines, and then when they figured out, people didn't really want to travel.
Right.
Then by the time people decided they wanted to travel, they didn't want to stay. And so some, believe it or not, of our largest hospitality our largest hospitality businesses, they had to let go a lot of staffing. They have not been able to get them back. They are still, some of them, operating at 75% to 80%, which is unsustainable long term for those businesses, right? They also were not able to take any of the money that they were bringing in and do capital investments. In the meantime, some highly attractive new projects were coming online here in Ulster County. And they were built, right? And they've opened within the last year and a half. So these are the brand new bright shiny pennies, which means that it's hard for some of our people that have been with us for years and years and years to be able to keep being as profitable or successful as they have been. But what I will also say is, you know, Ulster County provided a respite for people in the pandemic. And it seems like people are still looking for that, and we're so lucky that people keep coming back. But we, you know, honestly, Chairman, we lost some really good restaurants and places that people really love. And like I said, some places, the struggle now is capital back into their business, having that and workforce.
Thank you. Let's take a moment.
I guess this is kind of a philosophical question, certainly strategic. Can you have too much tourism? Can you ever have too much tourism? Because I think we're probably borderline here in the county. There's nowhere to live. Tourism is basically driving our housing crisis. So when you start to look at how much, where you want to go, how much more tourism do you want, how much more can we handle, where are people going to live, where are the workers going to live? Some of those places you're talking about, that 75% that would like to hire more, they can't hire because nobody, they're losing people for housing. People are literally moving away because there's nowhere to live. When you start talking about spending money going overseas and trying to just get anyone to come over here and check out Ulster County, I start to wonder, do we have an overall strategy that works with tourism, economic development, the kind of jobs we want to create? May not want to be tourism jobs, probably more towards industrial manufacturing is probably what we need more than anything right now. So just how do you take that into account when your job as tourism is basically get people here, but at the same time, I think we've got to think about how we're spending the money and can we even handle any more tourism?
I actually think that's a fabulous question to ask, Chairman, Legislator Maloney. I think that's actually a great question. I'm happy that you asked it. So let's look at one part of it to begin with, which is, so to your point about workforce and about people being able to live here and all of, well, let me back up a minute. I had said I wanted to put money into a strategic plan. And part of going through a strategic plan process is actually us taking a look at our strengths, weaknesses, whether it will be part of, can we entertain more? That's part of a strategic plan and give us a long-term vision. The word of the moment in tourism is sustainable tourism. And that is what we need to be focused on. There are ways that we can improve the experience for people who are coming here and encourage people to keep coming while improving the lives of people here. What do I mean by that? I mean wayfinding abilities. I mean improvements to parking lots. I mean infrastructure with electric cars. I mean real thoughtful work around environment and getting people into the environment. It's more that sustainable tourism is about more than just leave no trace. And we hope that that's what we're going to be developing. Now, when we talk about wages and jobs in this industry, there's two things that I'd love people to always, that I always say and I'd love people to remember. Number one, this is an industry where, you know, where earned wage and reported wage may be very different because it's still a cash industry. And I think that we forget that a lot of times when we talk about this. The career pathway in tourism is clear and attainable. It's one of the few industries that you can start literally as a bellhop and wind up owning Salt Properties, which are the people that operate Hutton Brickyard. David Bowd began as a busboy, his career as a bellhop, and then he worked his way to the top of the Marriott Corporation and then created his own company. So the career pathway is clear, it's accessible than most, and you do not need a higher education in order to succeed. You need the right skill set, the right mindset. So I think that that's really important about this industry. About housing is definitely a problem. It would be crazy to say it wasn't. And we create an image that makes people want to come here, right? We want them to, and sometimes they want to move here to live, and sometimes they want to bring a business here, and sometimes all they want to do is visit on the weekend. I think that if all of us work together, all of us put our heads together, including the industry, we can tackle the housing issue, but we all need to be sitting at the same table and talking about it.
Anyone else have any questions? Okay, let's hear
the regular pay around 250,000 $1,000 and professional services, I believe, around $688,000.
Yes.
What's the bulk of that expense?
In professional services, the bulk of it goes to the advertising agency.
Okay. Yep. The one in Texas?
Yeah. Well, our person's actually in Tulsa.
Anyone else? All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Appreciate
thank you so much.
Spending some time
thank
with
you.
Us and going
thank
over
you.
That. And,
I appreciate it.
Yep. Lisa, you are going to have to click disconnect on your screen.
You're so smart. What would I do without you? All right, wait. Here I go.
You're up
disconnect.
Next.
There you go.
Thank you.
I'm out. There you go, Tim.
You're going to switch to that in.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Makes sense, right? Yeah, so you don't have to be the one.
Everybody.
Yeah, you're the one that can.
Thank you.
So I'm ready to connect wirelessly now. There. So, do you know how to?
Yep.
Okay.
Michael, allow it. You're good to go.
My computer's getting old, though.
No.
It's getting slow in its old age.
What monitor is that?
This is the 570, I think.
Oh.
Yeah, T570.
You can't.
Did it not?
To
no, no, we'll try it again. Couldn't connect.
Got it.
There we go. Right. I will, again, also try to be brief here. Just some highlights from our budget presentation that's in your packet in the raw numbers, but want to provide some context. First of all, just the quick summary, kind of looking line by line from 2022 to 2023, showing that we've just seen a modest increase this year. Last year, we did add a staff position, so there was more substantial increase last year. This year, it's really maintenance mode on the budget. Our mission and vision, just a reminder, that we help the residents of Ulster County achieve long-lasting shared prosperity by growing our local economy, improving equity and access to opportunity, and enhancing our community's economic assets. You know, I think that aligns with our Ulster 2040 plan, which is kind of our strategic planning document that really tries to shape our economic development efforts towards a more people-centered economy, recognizing that our businesses are really representations of the workers, the owners that represent those businesses, and ultimately trying to help them grow so that we can improve the economy and the prosperity of our community. Oops. Our team has changed slightly since last year. You'll note the addition of Joshua Stratton-Rayner, our new Deputy Director of Economic Development. Kate Heidecker, who was with us last year, moved on to work for the Nova Foundation and their Kingston Projects Group, and we maintain a strong connection with her and the work that they're doing in our community as well. And then last year, Samantha Leota was our confidential secretary. We've now promoted her to business services administrator. So Barb and Samantha are two business services administrators. We have a vacant position that we hope to fill soon in the confidential secretary role. So in our budgeting process, we break down our budget into our programmatic areas or functions. And so these are the seven areas that we use to kind of plan out our year and to allocate our expenditures throughout the year. There's the obvious department administration and reporting work. A big chunk, probably the largest single chunk of our work, is designed to further implementation of the goals that were laid out in the Ulster 2040 strategy that came out back in late 2020. And we continue to make progress checking off items from that plan. I would say that 2023 is going to see a renewed effort to update that plan, localize it to our local communities, and try to provide updates to that plan based on the changing realities in a post-pandemic world. Lisa mentioned a really great workforce summit that we had back in July that highlighted the challenges that we all kind of know anecdotally that we face in the realm of workforce and how important that is to our employers, and that's given us kind of new energy and new tasks to undertake in the coming years to build out the workforce development components of our Ulster 2040 strategy. Like Lisa, and I'm thinking, Lisa, we've talked about this in passing, but if the budget is approved as it's presented to the legislature, I think there's an opportunity for tourism and economic development and also workforce development to think about our strategic planning efforts in concert with one another. There's a lot of overlap, as Lisa mentioned. We talk very frequently, and the hot button issue has always been workforce development this last year, so that's been a big topic of conversation. But there's a lot of other efforts to undertake. And you know, I think ultimately this is an extension of that renewed effort on our 2040 strategy, updating that and contextualizing it. Communications and engagement, this is a big part of the work that we do, supporting our local communities, engaging with them to make sure that we get the word out about programs that we're doing. Business retention and expansion, this is important to note, is a larger focus for us than the next line, our business development and attraction line, but both are important aspects of the work that we do. And then we also spend some time and resources on research and studies and data to support our work. Just a snipping, this was kind of really in the last few days, me reaching out to the team to kind of pull together some of the accomplishments of the year. And so this is similar to what was presented last year, but with more recent updated data on what we've been up to this year. The number of businesses that we're supporting continues to grow with the addition of a staff position. We're able to work with more businesses. And just as a window into our world, what these 350 business support requests look like are everything from a business reaching out saying they want to buy a piece of equipment, they can't quite afford it, they need some help, is there something we can do to either help them financially or point them in the right direction, to I want to start a business and I don't know where to reach out for help, I've heard that I need a business plan, how do I make a business plan, all the way down to site requests, which are a frequent one for us, either a business that wants to expand here in the community but doesn't have room in the space that they're in, or their lease is coming up for renewal, and they'd like to find another spot. So we connect them with real estate brokers and property owners in the community, or vice versa, somebody with a commercial or industrial property that's available for lease or for purchase that wants to get that out in the marketplace, see if there are interested businesses that they could connect with. We administered the Ulster County CARES grant program, which actually yesterday was the final day of that program. We are now working on closeout documents with the state. In total, we awarded about $940,000 out of $950,000 that we had available to us. So, Dennis, you owe me a beer because I think we had a bet that we wouldn't be able to fit it into the very compressed timeline of Ulster County CARES. And now we're gearing up for skip a line there, the programs that will represent an additional $3 million in direct assistance. That's the Ulster County CARES 2 program. That's another $1 million. And then the Boost for Main Streets program, which is a $2 million allocation of ARPA funds. In between there, we had a great groundbreaking ceremony last week at Cresco Labs, the cannabis company that has acquired property and is now starting renovation of an existing building pending construction of their main new facility in Ellenville, representing over $200 million of investment and the potential for 500 full-time benefited positions as they get up and running with their operation. Skipping down, we completed the transfer of the eastern part of the former IBM site known as Tech City, now known as iPark 87, to National Resources. And in 2022, we negotiated the PSA, the purchase and sale agreement, for the western portion, and are just completing the final steps before we can transfer the western portion of the campus to National Resources as well. And, you know, buried in that one bullet is a lot of work that I would, you know, be remiss to not note. The legislature's support and involvement in that work, in particular, Legislator Cahill, Chair Cahill, as you serve double duty on our UCEDA board, which has been very busy with this work over the last year, so thank you. And also to her. Thank you, Herb. I won't forget you.
I knew you were in.
Yeah, I was getting to it. And, you know, that'll be a source of ongoing project opportunities. It's been clear to me my whole time with the county that one of our biggest constraints for economic development is the lack of ready-to-go commercial and industrial sites. This opens up about 300 acres of space with concept plans that have now been presented to the town board in the town of Ulster for full redevelopment of that site, adding 1 million square feet of commercial and industrial space, as well as up to 500 housing units to help address the housing crisis, which I think it says something when real estate developers focused on the commercial sector start to realize that our housing crisis is so bad they need to get into the housing business more fully, and they've prioritized the housing portions of their project to reflect that need. We supported our businesses throughout the year. Really, this used to be an annual cycle, the consolidated funding application. It now has kind of devolved into a year-long cycle, but we were happy to assist with a large number of grants this year and became the second highest county in terms of number of priority projects in the region. We've also been operating under a shared services agreement with the City of Kingston to help them to administer their DRI small business grant programs. Most recently, we announced awards to 12 businesses in the Stockade Business District in Uptown, which is the eligible area for the program, providing them with $5,000 micro grants to support their businesses. And then, as Lisa mentioned and I mentioned before, held our workforce summit. One thing up here that we also undertook this year, there's an organization called the Hudson Valley Regional Council that has been dormant for a couple years. We've gotten more involved with that organization, as I know actually Chairwoman Bartels is also serves on that board. It's an important regional organization with ties to the U.S. Economic Development Administration and federal funding sources, and so we've renewed our effort. I now sit as the treasurer on that board of directors. So that's our activity for the year. A reminder of kind of our focus areas for implementation of the Ulster 2040 plan. These are the five focus areas for implementation: building our cluster networks in the industries that we identified in the plan, developing the workforce to support those clusters, trying to assist as we kind of see new opportunities for commercialization in early stage companies, especially in the green energy field. That seems to be, with the passage of the Inflation Relief Act, a booming sector at this stage. Increasing access to capital and focusing on equity, and then the kind of necessary admin and reporting and overhead to support all that work. You know, some breakdown that I think is included in some of your budget reports, but just to show you each of these line items, this is our professional services line, which totals to $275,000, but we have transactions programmed into the budget that anticipate our work. You'll see that a number of these are related to the implementation of Ulster 2040. There's one that, you know, Lisa and Sharon and I have been talking about for a long time, about halfway down the list, number six. There's a program through OET called On-the-Job Training and Customized Training. It's federally funded through WIOA. That creates some constraints that make it unavailable to some of our employers and workers. And so we've proposed to fund some local portion to be able to deliver those services to organizations that don't qualify for the federal funds. Strategic planning and business development, staff development. These are other two contractual lines, just to give you a breakout. Memberships, 7,200. These are the organizations that we typically subscribe to as members, and then our missed contractual expense at the bottom there. That's it.
Do we need to add a laptop
into your? We might. It's starting to go.
Actually, I think they're getting new laptops.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's been 6 years, so it's probably time.
Before I open the floor to questions, I just want to take a minute to commend the Department of Economic Development for the work that they've done over the, it's been 3 years almost now that I've been chairing this committee, just amazing the amount of work that's been accomplished in that 3 years, considering the dormancy that we had for the previous two decades, right? I mean, when you think about, you know, Cresco and the iPark 87, just those two alone, either one of them would have been something that somebody could have said it was a career highlight for them. Mm-hmm. But our department has done that multiple times, and that's just a couple of the higher profile ones, right. And there's actually literally dozens and dozens of other small success stories that the Department of Economic Development has been part of over the last few years that I've been involved here. And it's showing. The work your department is doing is showing, and it benefits the residents of this county in a very big way. And 2 or 3 years from today, when people are starting to punch the clock in those buildings, you know, and experience the healthcare benefits that they're going to get from working these places and having the new homes to live in as a result of these places going in, you know, it's not something that happens overnight. It's a lot of hard work, and your department is one of the departments that is absolutely responsible for making that happen in Ulster County. So thank you very much. Legislator Maloney.
First of all, I'd like to say if we could have got Cresco here without that massive pilot, I think that would have been something to hang our hats on.
They have a standard pilot.
They have a standard pilot.
To that, yeah. But I hear you.
They don't have a deviated pilot.
No, it's a massive pilot. I'd love to see. And a lot of that's on the state. The state should have a law that anything to do with cannabis and a lot of these other things as well. Nobody. Everybody can go into business everywhere in New York State. You have that already built in that you got a lot of the cannabis has to be grown here. we should extend that to these pilots. Then they come to Elmville and they can't hold going to another town over our head or whatnot. But and I'm concerned about some of these things that I've heard about that a lot of pilots are going to, there's going to be pilot requests for Tech City as well, which I think we got to be real careful because these school districts need the money, especially with regards to housing. You know, a couple years ago, we were talking to Suzanne Holt here, and she said the number one call that she gets is about infrastructure, water, sewer lines, gas, roads, electric access. And I think that's why historically most municipalities, counties all over the country, just like we had, economic development was not a separate department. It was a sub-department inside the plan because the focus was always infrastructure. And where I didn't see anything about infrastructure in your programs and initiatives, where we're, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours north of New York City, an hour south of Albany, we're not some, you know, paradise nobody knows about. Everybody's looking to come and live here. People are looking to tap into that consumer base. So just the question I was asking the tourism before about what are we trying to do and how much do we even need to do? I mean, these people are coming anyway, and if we don't have clean drinking water, we've had that issue in a couple of towns. I know my town has a major issue right now. City of Kingston's had some issues. Where's that focus on the environment and on infrastructure with regards to, we have such a place that people want to come, visit, live, and do business in anyways. There's got to be an economic development focus on infrastructure, and I feel as though sometimes we've lost that, especially moving out of planning. It was naturally always going to be infrastructure first, and now it's its own, and we got to be careful. And that's, some of those were comments. Mm-hmm. Some of it's a question to you about how often you think about infrastructure and sure. things like clean water and gas and water lines and electric access and roads and how much that has to do with being here.
Yeah.
If you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
And they're coming. Maybe we just need a clean place that has access to infrastructure.
Yeah. Well, I agree it's important. I wish that my days weren't as full as they are and that it was as easy as just kind of you build it, they'll come. I think, I would beg to differ. I think there's a lot of additional work above and beyond just making sure we have the infrastructure and the sites. But your point is well noted that, we maintain daily communications with the planning department. It is a nexus here that I think you're getting the theme, which is that all of these departments work very closely together in the work is such that there is no single silo that would work. It requires breaking down the silos and working across departments to get this work done. And, you know, infrastructure is a critical need. I am remiss in not mentioning it. What I would say is that our first priority, our first order of business, consistent with, I think, the goals of the legislature, has been to make the best and highest use of the economic assets that we have before we continue to expand in what is a very, very kind of costly endeavor, expand the infrastructure that is needed in places that don't have it. We have, you know, as Legislator Cahill mentioned, two major projects that were really adaptive reuse of old historic brownfield sites, and I think those sites have that infrastructure and have been sitting vacant, underutilized for far too long. So I wouldn't disagree that the infrastructure is an important part of our work. I would stress that our efforts and communications with the planning department and others focus on that and make sure that that's present to mind. With the comments on the IDA, I would just stress what you already know, which is that our IDA functions independent of our department. It functions under a uniform tax exemption policy. Our practice is not to lead with IDA incentives as some attractor. You know, I personally believe that that's not the best and highest use of the tool. There are instances where it is a request from our businesses either here that are trying to expand or that are trying to relocate here. All we do is refer them to that UTEP and help them understand that that's where they should look to understand what benefits they can apply to that separate board for. So look forward to continuing the conversation that we have started, you know, really in earnest with the newly seated board at the IDA about how to better coordinate that effort, how to interact more on the kind of basis of what is the policy, what should it be. But ultimately, I would just stress that that's an independent organization.
But real quick, but yeah, you just said that you're meeting. I read we had a thing a couple of months ago about contact, constant, seemed like there was constant contact between economic development and IDA, which going back years was never the case until a couple of years ago. It got to the point where one of the bullet pointed things that economic development, not under you, but right before you, would go over at if they hosted a function to talk to businesses, the third bullet point on there, I still have it, was IDA pilots. Now, to advertise IDA pilots seems insane to me, that hey, right. you're meeting with businesses and may want to do business here, right. And you go, hey, by the way, we can help you look into seeing if you can get a pilot. So I hope we've moved away from that. We're literally not putting that on literature to go meet with businesses,
right.
IDA pilots that we can teach about that. The constant contact, as you say, it's independent. Constant contact worries that it's not independent. I think we should be putting out, and I think it's a topic we really, I mean, do we even know how many, what is the total dollar amount we lose every year from us? There's different ways to equate that, but that's a problem. I know Saugerties, I sat down with a school board head a couple of years ago. He said the second or third biggest reason that our taxes are where they are in Saugerties is because of a couple of these bad pilots. So we have to be careful with pilots. We seem way too comfortable with them. The chair said if it's not a deviated pilot, you know, it's not a big deal.
I didn't say that. That's not what I said.
I didn't mean, but that's,
yeah.
But you, when I said pilot, you said, well, it's not deviated. I almost took it like, well, it's only 10 years. I think we really got to be careful with these pilots, and I'd like to see our economic development really involved with less of them. I'd like to see less of them. They were, the IDA is here for massive projects, high-paying manufacturing jobs, a chip plant, a VW, a Volkswagen, you know, not standalone hotels, not what I see going on, and I think it's a problem.
I'm gonna ask you to wrap it up. We'll kind of get back to the focus of the meeting,
yep,
with the budget.
Continue.
Yeah, well, okay. Let's get it, Chris. Well,
I had a question about another underutilized site, Hudson Valley Mall. Where can things go,
yeah,
with it?
I won't opine about it because it's an ongoing discussion that I know for a couple of years the planning department has been involved with the whole group, the current owners, looking at options, working with the town on what's permitted, what's acceptable, what would be acceptable as a future use scenario. There are also, quite frankly, constraints that the leases that the mall company has with its tenants put on them for future uses. So it's a complicated challenge, but one that I know that our planning department and the town are working on. So, you know, I think we've got a number of these sites. We're talking about 701 Grand Avenue, not to bring up a sore subject. We're talking about 11 Towpath that we just met with Mike Baden in the town of Rochester on. So there are still these sites out there, and it's certainly an area that we continue to focus on.
So just to go off of Legislative Chris Wolf's question, so how much more difficult is it to engage a private property owner versus when, like, the county forecloses or gets it through tax or whatever, right? You know, I mean,
right.
Once we own it, we can
we have
pretty
control.
Much we have control. But when you have a private enterprise like the Hull Group,
this,
you know,
is a challenge. And I don't mean to put Hull Group in this category, but there is a category of commercial landowners in any community, not just here,
yeah,
but here, who sit on properties hoping that they will appreciate and they'll get a windfall profit someday in the future. And what that means is that there's no economic activity happening on those properties, or
right,
depressed economic activity happening on those properties. And so, you know, this is, you know, we could have a long philosophical discussion here, but the fact of the matter is, where we see an opportunity to reactivate these sites, whether that's through the foreclosure process in the model that we've now seen work at Tech City, or whether it's through conversations, repeated conversations with commercial landowners, trying to provide them the avenues that they can pursue in order to redevelop their sites,
mm-hmm,
it's a major focus for us.
Okay, great.
A quick question about it. What about the idea of this vacancy fines? Like, is
yeah,
that even possible? Or?
You know, again, I won't go into a lot of detail because, quite frankly, it's not an area that we spend a lot of time thinking about, but I know that the city of Kingston, which has some vacancy tax or vacancy fine options, has found that they're imperfect solutions. There are loopholes. There are ways that a creative commercial property owner with attorneys at the call can figure out how to bypass a lot of that.
They're generally instituted at the municipal level.
They are. Yeah, these generally fall under kind of land use authority and local permitting authority. So, at least my knowledge, and Dennis would know better.
No, you're correct, yeah. Tim. It's a difficult situation. It's something that you threaten but probably never execute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because how do you actually really collect? I mean.
Well,
and they'll bury in attorneys. Yeah.
The example I would give you is it's rented for $1. There's one person at the site's not vacant.
Right.
Yeah. Yes, they would do. Any other questions? Let's do it.
Yeah. Thank you for the presentation, Tim. I was just wondering about the cluster networks you talked about.
Yep.
I think Legislator Maloney has a great point about tourism driving the housing costs, and people want to be here, so that makes our housing more expensive.
Yep.
And you mentioned as your example Salesforce data and events as cluster networks. Do you ever think about cluster housing so we can address transit centers, workforce housing in old train station areas so that we can have a future in 2040 that's not dependent on gas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, yes. I would say that when I was using clusters on that slide, we're talking about our economic clusters around these key industries. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, and anytime anybody wants to have a longer conversation about this over coffee, I'm a geek about it, but, you know, there's really good, methodologies around looking at how we focus our economic development efforts, not just on an industry. The film and television sector is actually a good example of this, that there are film production companies, but there are closely allied businesses in almost every sector that kind of form a cluster around those film and television production facilities. That's what I meant by cluster, but your use of it makes me think about smart growth and compact urban development. Mm-hmm. This is really the big motivation behind the Boost for Main Streets program that we brought to the legislature to propose some ARPA funding for, trying to continue to catalyze development in our commercial cores. The more we can do that, the more we build density. The more we build density, we make it walkable. We make transit work in those communities. This is really Dennis's world in the grand scheme of things, but the way that we develop our economy relates to all that, and so that's definitely our focus.
I asked because you mentioned collaborating with tourism to address sustainable tourism and housing. I think the more we work together, the better.
Yeah, and I beg to, I mean, I don't want to keep taking time, but I think I would just nitpick the concept that tourism is causing the housing shortage. I think our quality of life here is what draws visitors, and it's what draws residents, and it's that combination of visitors and residents that want to be here. I think it's a tricky thing where I feel like I want to live in a community where I want to live. Everybody wants to live in a community where they want to live. And so we have to recognize that I think we can't solve this problem by reducing demand. We have to solve it by increasing supply. And that's really where we're focused.
Thank you.
That's a good question. Do you all work in partnership at all with Pattern for Progress?
Yes, very closely.
They're so great.
They're amazing. Yeah. And they've gone through a leadership transition with Adam Bosch taking over from Jonathan. And Jonathan's departure is a kind of ground shifting in the universe of economic development in the Mid-Hudson Valley. But Adam's doing a great job. We actually have their annual dinner tomorrow night that I'll be attending. And, speaking to infrastructure, I know that one of Adam's big areas of focus is really thinking about infrastructure. We have had discussions about all the federal money that's on the table that a lot of our communities just don't understand, don't have the capacity to seek out. Ultimately, the planning department often works with them on that, but it may be a time when it's kind of an all hands on deck to make sure we're taking best advantage of all the federal money that's available for that.
That's great. Thank you.
Yeah.
Just Mr. Maloney, go ahead.
Point of quick clarity. I consider just about every single person that stays in a short-term rental in Ulster County to be a tourist. It's certain tourism. I'm not denying tourism. It's certainly driving a big part of the housing crisis. To deny that, I think, denies, an opportunity to do something about it, whatever we choose to do. But it's certainly driving, which means tourism is driving the housing crisis in a big way.
Anyone else? All right, great. Well, thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
Appreciate you taking some time here with us.
No, it's okay. It's okay. There's another one next to you.
Right. Do you mind just disconnecting?
Oh, yeah.
And next up we have Director Williams from the Office of Employment and Training.
I had a very long tutorial this morning.
And I'm going to take these and pass those down.
Do you have a presentation?
Yep, I have a really long one.
Thank you very much.
So, anything extra? I don't. I will talk from the screen.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cool.
So, I truly promise to be brief in my presentation for the OET budget. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Sharon Williams, and I'm director, and sitting behind you is my partner in crime, really, I will say it as it is, Faith Golden, who is our deputy director of the department. And when it comes to our budget, Faith is our financial person, and we work in conjunction to move the budget forward. So if you're not familiar with what we do in OET, or the Office of Employment and Training, our goals through WIOA, which is the Workforce Innovation and Opportunities Act, it's our federal charge, is to upskill the local workforce and match job seekers with employers. We provide a lot of job search assistance, financial assistance for training opportunities, paid internships, and on-the-job training for eligible adults, dislocated workers, and young adults. And I would be remiss if I didn't count our younger adults through our summer youth employment program. So they are not on that slide, but we do support them as well. And we work closely with Ulster County BOCES and SUNY Ulster and other training providers within the area to ensure that we can train our workers for finding well-paying jobs in in-demand occupations. And I want you to hold on to that phrase, in-demand occupations, because that's going to be the word du jour, and we're going to be changing that soon. So OET is fully funded by federal and New York State funds. There is no county share in the OET budget. The bulk of our funds are federal funds from the Department of Labor through that Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Act. We're required to spend 80% of our annual allocations through the Department of Labor, and our program or funding year runs July 1 through June 30th, so we sort of cut the county's calendar. These funds are used to support paid internships for our young adults, as well as the occupational training that I mentioned before, on-the-job training for adults dislocated and young adults. And as you saw in Tim's presentation, we are actually very excited that the Department of Economic Development might take on a small portion of those OJTs, because there are certain things that we cannot fund based upon our federal guidelines. And we'll talk about that in my final slide. We also receive funds from New York State for our summer youth employment program. It comes through ODIDA, and that is to provide summer employment opportunities for eligible 14 to 20-year-olds in Ulster County. Next slide. This is our budget breakdown. The county divides our budget into three categories. We have general office expenses, including payroll, benefits, and office supplies. The second category is youth incentives and supportive services, such as work boots for paid work experience, and then there's occupational training and OJTs and paid work experiences. Revenue is divided and separated into federal, state, and the interest. Federal is WIOA, state is SYEP. So, as you know, part of the county executive's budget proposal for this year is a $5 million workforce development allocation. If the legislature should approve that, we would like to propose an extension of the SYEP program. Currently, our SYEP program runs for only 5 weeks during the summer, and as we know, there are 9 weeks of summer. What do we do for those other 4 weeks with those young people? And not all of them are picked up by their work site. Also, the idea of an in-school youth employment program. The interesting thing about our federal dollars is that they support out-of-school youth more than in-school youth, but the in-school youth will prove to be a pipeline for our summer youth employment program, and they need the opportunity to look for work, particularly that 14 to 17-year-old age group, and then an expansion of our business services support to emerging industries, such as the cannabis industry. and everyone, I know Tim talked about our Cresco Labs, any industry right now, well, particularly the cannabis industry, if we have an employer who's looking for support from OET, we are unable to support them. Because cannabis is still considered an illegal drug on the federal side, and even though we've approved it on the state side, we can't support them. So, again, if Cresco Labs looking for employees and we might want to help them, we actually cannot by our mandate. So we're looking for that to help us to support those industries that are coming in that we can't serve through WIOA. And that is my budget presentation. Are there any questions?
Oh, there's going to be a whole room full of questions for you.
I'm like, as the hands go flying up.
Let's start with Bill, and then let's go to Malone.
Yes, sir. I just a question about the structure of your budget. So it's federally funded. It's sort of on the half year of where we're at. So you're funded now through June of 23.
Yes.
This one on the federal level. So with changes in Congress or whatever's going to happen, could that affect your funding? And do you have a contingency plan if that's changed at all?
Starting July 1, 2023.
Right.
There is always that risk. But right now we have word through our sort of legislative supporters on the federal level that there won't be much change in the Workforce Innovation and Opportunities Act. So we are comfortable that we won't change our funding. There's a potential for a slight decrease. But what's been happening over the past few years, we've had a slight increase. So we're comfortable that we'll stay at the same level.
Okay.
There shouldn't be any change with a change in leadership.
Great.
But that is a great question.
Ms. Maloney?
I don't know nearly as much about your budget and stuff, and I think probably in part because it is a pass-through and it is completely federally state-funded. How often do you work with, like, to help the county? Now as a county, we're having certain departments and offices. How often do you help the sheriff, UCAP? There's a couple departments that really need help. How often do you work with county departments to help them fill some of these vacancies?
It's funny that you should mention that. We are working more and more with our own departments. In fact, we are working with UCAP right now to help them to train their drivers through the commercial driver training that is one of our providers. So as drivers are hired, if they don't currently have their CDL and they're an eligible individual, we would be able to support UCAP in paying for their CDL conversion and their training. So as the departments are looking for it, we're trying to see if there's a way that we can assist them.
Okay.
In some cases, we cannot. But if we can, we try.
Yes. Sheriff's office.
And with the sheriff's office as well.
I just remember from we had a great summer kid working on the security side, and I think we tried to push him to full-time. I just remember connecting with him myself.
Yep, absolutely. Usually with the sheriff's department, we are working with our young adult program, those that are 18 to 24, and they can get a paid work internship there with the sheriff's department. And if they are eligible, they can become a full-time employee of the sheriff's department.
Anybody else before I go? Okay, I got a couple questions. So, do you engage the private sector? For example, I work at IBM, and they have this program that they call the New Collar Employees, which are a kind of a 180-degree change from what they used to do. You know, you had to have a master's degree to get hired. Now, they reverse that, and they go into the local high schools, and they're grabbing young adults from high schools who show aptitude in that type of work, bringing them in as apprentices and work. Do you work in a similar vein with some of these other? I know there's a couple of local companies that are always trying to bring people in. You know, it's just.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of push-pull that we have in the department. Because of the guidelines by WIOA, we are only able to fund those positions that will lead to an industry-recognized credential in one of our in-demand occupations.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this two-step process.
Mm-hmm.
And so, no, we haven't been able to sort of support those apprenticeships for other small businesses. But if we can sort of match it to one of our in-demand careers, I don't know, a technician.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, a technician is usually a broad area. If there is a training provider that will help to upskill that individual in the position that they have, mm-hmm. we do have some opportunities for them, whether it's an OJT, meaning an on-the-job mm-hmm. training, or is it sending to them to a SUNY Ulster class mm-hmm. to upskill them so we can support that financially. Mm-hmm. It again, that sort of push-pull is always the thing that we struggle with in OET.
Mm-hmm. So my second question is going to be, so do you get students who go through training for a longer period of time, or is it just like usually a 3 or 6 month thing and then that's it? And my follow on to that is, do you follow up and see if the training that you've provided has really helped them in a career down the road?
Absolutely. So let me start with the second question. Yes, we do follow up for all of our participants who go through our program. That's part of our requirement to the state, is mm-hmm. that we show that they've actually gained, whether it's increased employment, mm-hmm. increased wages because of the training. Mm-hmm. And excuse me, was that first part again? Because I went right to the second part.
Yeah. So so it was like tracking of it, and how long do they stay? Yeah, and that kind of thing. Do they go into the field in which you train them?
Most of them do. And it really depends upon the actual position that they're going for. So anywhere from 3 months to 6 months can be a training opportunity. And then if it's some of our work experiences, it can be up to 8 months. Mm-hmm. But these are all short-term opportunities. Right. It isn't like they're in a training program for a year, mm-hmm. 2 years. It is short-term. Mm-hmm.
I just was wondering who declares what is an in-demand industry. Right. I have two questions. That's the first one.
Well, the first, that is our Workforce Development Board, which falls under OET, and so they review based upon DOL data, trends, what are the in-demand occupations, and then we try to match that with a training provider who can provide the training for those individuals who might enter that workforce. Mm-hmm. Ironically, we will be looking at that list the end of this year, start of 2023, to modify that, because data has shown that there is a decrease in the healthcare occupations, so we might be moving some of those, I won't say off the list, but inactive, and then looking at those that are coming on, trending more in the green careers, areas around fiber optics, so we're going to try and keep up with what employers are going to be looking for.
And so that was my second question, is how often is it updated?
It's updated annually.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good.
Yeah, that's good, because I was thinking very similarly, because I know that, during the pandemic, there was a terrible time hiring people in the tech field. You couldn't get people, programmers or engineers or anything. And now all of a sudden that trend is reversed. And it was in a very, very short period of time where the most in-demand jobs are now being laid off. And then we're talking about within a year or 18-month period, right? So how does your office deal with that? Like, they're looking at it year to year. I mean, you have to have a very flexible, agile way of approaching what you're offering year in and year out, right?
Absolutely. So we are trying to keep up with the changes that are happening in the field. Here's one of the issues, particularly around technology. We have not been able to find an industry-recognized credential that the state will support in technology. Everybody wants a technology job. Everybody needs somebody with technology. The state has not recognized one credential, and so that means we can't support mm-hmm. the training of any individual in the technology field. It's one of the things that we are advocating across the state. Workforce mm-hmm. development directors are like, we can't continue to do this. We're losing an entire industry. Why won't you recognize it? Now, we do understand that technology is ever-changing, but it's not changing that rapidly that we can't get someone with one credential mm-hmm. and move them into a higher paying job. But we do try to keep our finger on the pulse at all times. Again, I'll go back to the fiber optics. Mm-hmm. We don't have a training provider here in Ulster County. We are observing one of the training providers down in Westchester. We want to see if there's a way that we can bring it locally to sort of get ready to train.
We got a guy.
We got a guy. We just need a provider to provide that, because then we would be able to support any employee or any job seeker who's interested in joining that field. We can train them and get them ready to go to work.
Mm-hmm. Well, fortunately, there's a big company moving into I Park 87 at this
point. It's tied together. Absolutely. We're trying to do it. So we want to get ahead of that. So as they're coming in, we want to make sure that anyone that they hire can be trained, and we would be able to support them if they're eligible as an Ulster County resident.
So I got Legislator Erner, then Legislator Crisfaw.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation, Director Williams. And I was really impressed on a recent tour you gave me of your department and your office, I should say, and the staff that you have there, and everybody seems fantastic. And we talked a little bit there about some of the types of, just based on what you said here about the where the funding comes from and the demands and things like that, the types of business that you can and can't support. Like, for example, you mentioned one base, like what's prohibited by federal law, but also I remember talking about someone wanting to start a business, and he said, no, that's not really our thing. Maybe that's more economic development. But what about, can you talk a little bit more about the forms of business that you can work with? And I'm interested personally in supporting worker-owned cooperative businesses, and is that a type of business form you can work with?
So our business services, that component of what we do, really takes the form of assisting businesses in finding out what are their tax credits that they can get for hiring. Maybe it's a disabled employee, a veteran. We help them if they are eligible for OJTs, on-the-job training. The sort of caveat for that, any position in an OJT must lead to full-time employment, or they must be fully employed by that particular business. And let's say that individual is lacking a few skills that they would learn on the job. We can support that employer by subsidizing 75% of that employee's salary during that training period. But besides that, those are limited business services opportunities. I mean, the things that we also can provide is free service. All of our services are free. Helping them to recruit for positions, helping them to vet individuals who are looking for jobs, pulling together job orders, meaning trying to find a pool of applicants for them to send to them for hiring. Those are our key sort of business service opportunities through the department.
Thank you.
That actually leads right into my question, which was about marketing and how you market your youth employment programs, especially looking for diversity.
So marketing for youth is actually our easiest thing because every young person wants a job. And we do a lot of work within the high schools with other community organizations. We have a lot of repeat young people who come through the program. So we don't have any difficulty reaching that youth population. We continue to sort of struggle with our adult population and helping them to understand who we are, what we do, and how we can help them. And we're actually about to launch a new sort of marketing campaign that will get the word out. And we're also looking to use a little bit of technology around webinars to increase our business services. So business owners, you know, like tax credits available to you. And we'll do through webinars with that. So we're hoping to do more as the new year starts.
Well, I'll take it. I will ask the chairman to invite you to the legislature to give a presentation during a legislative session, which would give you a little bit broader exposure to that campaign when you do it.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll listen to you.
In the realm of cannabis, I have a question about Cresco. I think it's an important industry for our county, not only recreational and medicinal, but with cannabis being hemp and the industrial use. Is it possible to do trainings in horticulture, soil science, or engineering with related fields? Could those people still go work for those industries?
So the answer is, if we can find a training provider that provides an industry-recognized credential, we could support those adjacent opportunities, but in no way could
hemp
we
adjacent.
Hemp adjacent. That's going to be a new phrase.
Yeah.
Thank
You're
you.
Welcome.
You heard it here first, right? So that, because again, that's our major stumbling block in most of this support that OET can provide.
My second question is, I liked what Chair Cahill said about the new collar worker, and there's even workers now that don't want to wear collars at all.
That's right, exactly.
Collar worker.
Yeah.
It reminded me of the Great Resignation. Have you had trainings or thoughts about how to address the new type of worker of the future?
So we don't provide any training.
I mean, for yourself.
Oh, for ourselves, yes.
Plan for the future.
Yeah, we are always sort of trying to figure out how we can tap into the workforce and that alternative worker, whether they're looking for a remote, whether they're looking for something that is non-traditional. Again, our issue is we cannot support them in whatever job opportunities they're looking for if it doesn't lead to an industry-wide credential. I mean, I hate to say that as like a recording, but that's our...
No, it's very strict.
It's so strict in what we do. And so, again, if we're talking about innovative industries, if we're talking about innovative positions, if we're talking about part-time, if we're talking about flex time, if we're talking anything that's not sort of a full-time traditional sort of position, it's difficult for us to support. Not impossible, but difficult, and takes a lot of extra effort. Again, that's why we sort of have put together that proposal of if there is money allotted for workforce development and it is approved, there are a few things that we could definitely do that would help us to go around some of those strict parameters.
Thank you.
Chair?
Let's hear it. We're going to let legislator Erner go first, and then we'll go.
So just following up on legislator Hewitt's comment, and I'm imagining there might be some process by which we could lobby the state and the federal government to recognize more or put out more credentials. Maybe that's up to industry as well, but change federal laws so that localities can do what they feel they need to do for what industries are appropriate in their areas and things like that. Do you have any experience with or suggestion to us maybe as a legislature of what we could say to the state and feds?
Well, I think part of it is really determining what is the credential. And if people can come to agreement on that, I think it's easier to sort of sell that to the state. I mean, we had at any given moment sort of make proposals to the state or the credential that we've heard of that maybe an employer has brought to us. It's up to them to determine whether it fits the criteria. So in terms of any advocacy, I think it's better in multiple numbers. It isn't solely Ulster County. It might be a Mid-Hudson region. We are considered the Mid-Hudson, you know, it's Ulster, Sullivan, Orange, Dutchess. If we come together and sort of go to the state, that also gives more power for that training, that sort of change. I don't know when that happens. State duel is very... I'm trying to think of a really good word. Adjacent. They are very sort of bogged down in their parameters, and shifting them is difficult. It takes sort of major upset to change that. So I don't know if there's an easy answer to that. Sorry.
Thank you. I want to take an opportunity to ask my colleague a question. It has to do with the fact that given the demand for labor and the jobs available, what's the largest barrier for people that go through your program of actually taking a job? I think I know the answer, but I wanted you to say it.
You know, honestly, I don't know if the barrier is in them taking the job. The barrier is them completing the training to get the job. You know, there are certain eligibility criteria that each individual must have to go through our training program. We have difficulty with adults not being able to turn in paperwork, find their documentation. We have some issues with recreational drug use. And so they're tested and they don't pass their test, which means they're kicked out of the program. So our barriers are not on this side. Once they get through, they're almost guaranteed the job. It's ensuring that they get through that we sometimes have difficulty.
What we hear from businesses is transportation is the largest barrier. Once they find an employee, getting an employee to actually get to the job is a huge barrier. And I'm just wondering if there's any programs, and I'm going to point over here to this individual that talked to me about a program that they use in Dutchess County, which takes the county cars and actually rehabs
wheels
them.
Wheels to Work.
Yeah, Wheels to Work program. And that's something I think that the legislature should consider to think about, that people that are essentially want to take jobs can't because they can't get to work, and then the transit system is not conducive, essentially, to allow them to work the hours they need to work. Specifically, what you just heard with respect to the problems associated with daycare in the hospitality industry, also associated with the use of transit in the hospitality industry. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine, Dennis. And I will say one of the other providers, which is the Ulster BOCES, they're looking at converting some of their van usage to help employees get around, and some of the young adults who are trained at BOCES to their employers. So there are definitely models out there. Can we do better? Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Doesn't BOCES rehab cars? Like, they have classes where they just rehab cars, and then we give those cars to... I know when I used to be there, we gave those cars to workers.
Yeah.
Right, so I think they used to do that.
Yeah, they don't do the rehab to give.
Right.
They do a lot of rehabbing of vehicles, but they're not given to the individuals.
So Deputy Executive Kelly took that as a to-do.
That's not us.
We need to find that.
I know, that's not us.
All right, any other questions? All right. Thank you very much, Director Williams. I appreciate your time, and keep up the good work.
Thank you.
All right.
Take care.
All right,
where are we? And I have the minutes for you to
sign. That's right.
Let's get this going here. We'll go on to the next resolution. Okay, so we're going to move on to our resolutions. We have four resolutions for this month's meeting. First resolution will be resolution number 538, which is approving the execution of a contract for $90,000 entered into by the county with Citizens for Local Power Incorporated for the Department of Finance, and it's ARPA funded.
Questions?
I'll move for discussion.
I'll make the motion.
Okay.
I think they changed it to community for local power. Is it in there because it's a contract thing?
I actually have the answer to that. That they didn't register through the... their official legal name is still Citizens for Local Power. We had a very long discussion about it. Thank you.
Any other questions on 538? Okay. All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, great. Thank you. Resolution number 542 is approving the execution of a contract amendment for $12,250, causing the aggregate contract plus the amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into the county through the B&C Incorporated, doing business as Bello Incorporated Department of Tourism. Right. I'll accept the motion for discussion.
Motion.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, thank you. 543 is authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Department of Agriculture and Markets for development of the Agricultural Farmland Protection Plan, Department of Planning.
I'll move it.
Second. Okay. Any discussion? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, and then the last resolution for the night is resolution 544, which is establishing capital project number 648, the Ulster and Delaware Corridor Rail Trail, Shandaken. The PIN number on that is 8762.89, and authorizing the chair of the legislature to execute agreements for federal aid with the New York State Department of Transportation, amending the 2022 capital program, declaring intent to act as lead agency for CEQA, Department of Planning. These are always so many acronyms and titles and departments. So, Dennis, want to take just a minute and explain what this is real
quick? This is a rail truck project that begins up at High Mount and runs to Big Indian. The state has funded the first piece of this program. We did a feasibility study. The first piece is about $3.9 million, if I recall, from federal money, and then it's an 80% funded project. It's a TAP award, which means Transportation Alternatives Award, and the entire project is a little over $10 million. We fund the first phase. That runs essentially from High Mount to the Bel Air Day use area. And so we'll be following that up. We're currently in the process of selecting a consultant to do that design work. So we'll be following that up with design. Construction is probably at least 2.5 to 3 years away.
The rest of that is going to be all county funded, or
no? We're only doing phase one, Legislator Maloney. So it has a logical beginning and ending in phase one. When we finish phase one, we'll start to take a look and see what funding is available for phase two. But I doubt that we would process phase two or proceed with phase two without funding.
And we don't expect to spend any county funds through phase one?
No, phase one has a 20% match, and a 20% match that will leave around $1 million.
All right.
We are continuing to seek, we've got an application in for funding. We are continuing to seek funding through the Recreation Trails Program. We've also reached out to ORTA, which has lands that adjoin this, as well as New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, to see if there's any funding available for that.
And the upkeep, is it municipal upkeep? Are we keeping it up? Or
we're probably going to look at it. We're looking at maintenance right now, but as it stands right now, the county would be responsible in the current version. What we would end up doing is probably look to ORTA or others that are up there to maintain it over a longer period of time. Since the project...
Which county funds?
Hire
someone, you mean?
No. ORTA, which is the Olympic Research... Regional Development Authority. Thank you. I don't know why I said research. But they have a vested interest up there, as does New York State DEC. It opens up lands about 1,200 acres that they currently own on the mountains. So we would look for maintenance agreements with that. We don't have them yet, but we would look for them.
Any other questions on 544? Okay, all those in favor? Aye. Opposed? Okay, thank you. So that concludes our resolutions, and I'm going to move on to old business. I think Legislator Litz, I have it.
Yeah, back in September, the Executive Director of the Soil and Water Commission made a presentation to us. What an ask of, I think, $131,500. Yet when the new budget numbers came out, they were held at 91. I think it's 91. And we all agreed that, you know, their programs are increasing. They are getting more into, they're going to purchase a no-till drill, so that we can keep sediment from moving into the streams and better soil health. But it was an increase in the budget. But I believe Cornell Cooperative Extension did get a 3% increase in their budget. So,
do you have an amendment in? A budget amendment in to increase it to agreed upon?
Not yet.
Sure.
Yeah.
I just want to point out, like, this is not part of the executive budget. This is submitted by the legislature to us and incorporated in, so it wasn't a decision on our behalf. I just wanted some clarification there.
But wouldn't it have
been? We don't create the soil and water conservation. That's actually under the legislature's purview.
So
we don't manage that.
Do we need a budget amendment to change that?
Yes.
We still need an amendment once we,
yes,
we put it in. Right.
Yep.
But how did it get in the budget if this is the purview of this committee?
The legislature submits on their behalf.
You're saying we submitted it at 90.
Correct.
It's like we submitted
it. Who did, though?
Yeah, who did?
This committee should have.
Soil and water, and then the legislative staff would then transmit the budget to us, to the executive.
But it would, but it should come through this committee.
That's
somebody in the legislature passed that to the budget.
Yes.
Without, when circumvented this committee, who had already listened to a budget presentation and agreed that we should increase the funding.
So they submit those back in May,
yeah,
and June. So I wouldn't say that if you had a presentation in September, the budget had already been done for a month.
Okay. So we can.
No, they didn't. I wouldn't say that.
So would you have an objection to us amending that in the upcoming budget? So then let's just amend it.
It's our money.
Yeah, it's our money. No, it's not our money, but...
It's the purview of this committee.
Sure, Cahill, I had discussions with several people about this, including Legislator Litz, and I thought that Legislator Litz agreed that the legislature could do this separately outside the budget process next month. So that might be an equally easy or easier way, since the legislature does have funds to add those funds in to what has been proposed in the existing budget.
I would like to include it in this budget, though, yeah. If we could.
I'd like to clarify it in this budget.
Me too. I think it would be important to put it in there in this budget rather than using legislative funds. Right? I mean, we have, you know, we're throwing around tens of millions of dollars, I think, for 50, what is it? How much was it? 50,000?
40 grand.
40 grand.
I think it's 40 grand.
Right, 40,000 bucks in the grand scheme of things. I think we can arrange to get that in the budget somewhere or another.
One other point on that, just because there was some confusion on this, is there was some discussion from the executive director of Flood and Water that the increase of 40,000 might have something to do with the retirement program for their employees. It turns out that that's not the case, and that the district is entirely funding that portion. Mm-hmm. So these funds are for other purposes.
Oh, yeah.
And so I'd like that to be in the record.
Yeah, yeah. So Herb and I will get together to put a budget amendment in for that. Okay. Thank you. Any other old business? Okay, any new business? All right, so Legislator Criswell, then Legislator Sparrow.
Yeah, I'm a little confused about something. We heard presentations on both sides of the issue at the last session about the apprenticeship programs, and I don't know which direction, I don't know where I sit on it, and I would like to actually have this committee have a conversation about it, and I just need better understanding from people who know more about it than I do, basically is what I'm asking for, because I saw both sides of that coin, and so, I guess that's what I'm asking for, is a discussion about it, by people who've studied it a little bit more than I have.
I agree. I talked after the meeting for 20 or 30 minutes with some of the presenters there, and I've already talked to Mike before that, and I thought it sounded great until I heard some of the presenters. I thought maybe bringing both sides in and having them both have a seat at the table and kind of go through, because they're both kind of making claims that don't jive. And to hear them both, and they all know each other very well and have good relationships, I think they both sides would be willing to come in. But at this point, I went from being a yes to having a real concern. I did the same thing. I couldn't decide. Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to ask for a clarification, if I can, from the Deputy Clerk Tantillo, if she might be able to help us with this. We had a public hearing on this, right, last month?
Yeah.
So for us to go in and look at that again might be problematic. I don't know.
Is there still another public hearing that comes?
I don't think so. I think that was it.
Session.
Yeah. The public hearing was to proceed the following session where we'll vote on it, right?
I don't know if you have to vote on it.
No, I'm saying, but that was the premise, right? Is to have the public hearing, take the input, and then make our decision based on that. Yeah.
Yep. Sure, Cahill, it does seem like that there is room here for developing an apprenticeship program that would have the benefits that were proposed with the language we currently have,
yeah.
And not have the liabilities that were identified in the public hearing. I mean, that's one of the things a public hearing can do, is show you that we need a better direction. So I agree with Legislator Maloney's impulse, but wonder if it could be done not necessarily through presentations, but maybe asking for someone who, from the different perspectives, to come and work with the legislature to develop a good legislation on apprenticeships. Because after those presentations at the public hearing, I think the existing legislation doesn't have the same support that it had previously. But I think there is support for the goal that legislation was trying to bring forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to see language that would tighten it up, that would improve the apprenticeship programs, but not have the effect on area businesses that was described to us.
Yeah. So go ahead, listener.
No, I was just gonna say that we've had a public hearing on that particular piece of legislation. And if we alter it significantly, then we have to put forth another piece of legislation that would require another public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So, we don't have to just pass this one because we had the public hearing. Mm-hmm. What was confusing is we had a presentation on what, their apprenticeship program was, And then we all got copies of another company that said their graduation rate is 27%, not 100%.
This are in question now.
Yeah, so I mean, we need clarification because we're hearing two different.
And there were things about the apprentice could be from another state. Things about it that didn't sound as good.
My big concern was that it seemed to penalize smaller businesses, mm-hmm. and that gave me real pause because I think apprenticeship programs in small businesses are amazing opportunities because you get such one-on-one experience with mentors, and in a larger, you could possibly get sort of, you know, caught up in just a large group.
I mean, the apprenticeship program for a small business might be one business, two businesses, three businesses get together and do it. I mean, something like 825 is 130 businesses chip in that $2.9 million. I think Local 17 is 350 contractors. So it's drastically different. You know, it's not even apples and apples.
Does anyone know who wrote and introduced the resolution?
It is an existing.
Put it up, I think, working with Mike Hamm. And
yeah. It's an existing apprenticeship law, and they wanted to adjust the numbers.
Okay. I spoke to Mike Hamm for the first time after the public hearing, and he made a great case about how small businesses don't qualify for such large contracts typically. So it might be moot for them, but we don't want, like someone said, have we thought through the impacts? And I don't think we have.
Well, and what's your definition of a small business? That's all these things keep,
right.
You know, we were given all these different things, and then we had a fairly small business, local, come in and say that they wouldn't be allowed to put in for a bid on some project if this was passed here in Ulster County, and they could bid before they are a local company. If you don't, maybe Mike Hamm doesn't consider them big enough or small or whatever. Right. But
can I ask, is it in this committee? Does it go through?
I'm trying to look. I don't think it does. I think it goes through Ways and Means.
But I feel like it
laws
should be laws
and rules.
Laws and rules because it deals with contracts.
Yeah. All right.
But the subject matter is clearly in my world.
I
wouldn't have been surprised if you didn't get
it. I don't know if the resolution is up this month.
I don't think it is. I just looked for it. I didn't see it.
It's usually 2 months longer after.
Yeah.
Well, often it would be the following month if you have a resolution to approve it. So you have time, and you certainly could, even though there's been a public hearing, if you make a substantive change, as the chair said, you'd have to have another public hearing. Mm. But you could certainly. I don't think there's anything that would prevent you from.
No, I think we just bring it up in caucus, right? And you know, make sure that Jonathan has it as a an item for us to discuss in caucus, and because there was questions raised, and obviously,
I walked away having no idea.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for the larger employees, those numbers are easy to attain. For the smaller local guy, it's extremely difficult for them to even hire an apprentice at any level, right? They usually have a handful of people work from them. I mean, that we have some of the folks that presented there, they have a little bit larger groups of people working for them there, but you know, the smaller guys just have no shot at that at all, right?
I want to encourage the idea of the caucus discussions. I see this as having been, this was introduced on behalf essentially of workers, of union workers even specifically, and then we hear voices at the table from small businesses. We hear the workers talking about working for contractors with bigger businesses, so this could be an opportunity to have a little bit of a discussion about the roles that each of these plays in here in Ulster County and how we might want to facilitate among them.
Okay, so is there any other old business that we want to discuss here?
I have a new business.
I'm sorry, yes, new business.
Okay. Yeah. So I recently had a conversation with Adam Bosch from Hudson Valley Pattern for Progress because We were talking about the vitality of SUNY New Paltz and the fact that, you know, this budget cycle, what's going on in the state level, but also the fact that Ulster County is becoming more and more unaffordable for the workers that work at SUNY New Paltz to live in. And he said that that Pattern for Progress did a whole study, and they have data, and they have a report, and he'd be willing to come.
No, we've seen it. We've seen it. We saw it in this committee when housing was here last time, right? We did see that. That was really the basis for the county's housing study, right? If I'm not mistaken, the
Pattern for Progress was, and then they also did one on the economic impact of the university. Which
that's a couple of years old now, right? Old,
that I think he just started at Hudson Valley.
No, I'm saying the housing study is, I think, at least a couple of years old at this point.
Okay.
The most recent one, Dennis, that they did, I don't know if you know exactly. I follow them very closely because of the work that they do like that, and I'm trying to think. It's been, you know,
it's tough to know what Adam was talking about. They did an economic impact of the college and the region.
Yeah.
For that, and I know from the work that we're reviewing. They're reviewing right now. The town is reviewing a housing proposal which would include not only student housing or basically rental housing. It would also include some housing that would be available for staffing as well.
Where do you put that?
I was just going to say, maybe, like, I know that I had a previous long-term relationship with Jonathan Drapkin. I think, to Legislator Fisferi's point, I think it would be good to invite Adam in.
Yeah.
He's, you know, long-term kind of also ancillary member of the community, working for DEP for years, and now in the new role, I think it'd be... I'd like to.
Yeah, I mean, so that even sounds like something we should probably do with a joint committee meeting between this committee and the housing.
I think that's great, honestly.
Yeah, and then everybody who has impact there could, because we have education and economic development, and the housing is in now and the other committee.
How do we organize a joint committee meeting?
You just talk to the clerk.
Because I think
sounds like Michael's taking notes.
We need one to do an apprenticeship program, too. Maybe with laws and rules and economic development to continue.
I think we could do that, but if you feel free, you know, feel free to reach out. I think we should discuss that in caucus personally and see where that goes, and then if we do come to a consensus that we want to then go further with something we've already had a public hearing on, you know, that's the thing with that thing that, you know, that was floating around for a while. We had a public hearing, and then we do have a reaction to the public comments, right? So now it's our turn to take action on that if we feel we should, and I think the proper place to initiate that would definitely be in our caucus, so then the leaders of the legislature could then direct what our next step should be, you know, based on the caucus's wishes, right?
Yeah.
Anybody else? I saw Liz Litter Nolan, you had your hand up. Are you good?
Yes.
Okay.
I just wondered if there was anybody at the state level or in some of the nonprofit world who could help us with understanding the function and constraints around use of apprenticeships.
Yeah.
Is there anybody we could turn to for extra?
Oh, they'll just put you right to they'll push you right to labor.
Yeah.
Mike Ham.
Yeah, well, Mike Ham will be.
There you go.
Give us a presentation.
Mike will give you an opinion. Always does.
Anyone else have anything else?
Hearing none, I'll make a motion for adjournment.
All right. Yes, thank you. All right. Thank you, everyone.
Aye.
Appreciate your time. Oh, all in favor? Aye. I never heard anybody say no yet.
You know what study you was referring to?